Hello, folks. Every single year, the Baker Street Irregulars Weekend in New York City is the most fantastic time for Sherlockians from all over the world. They all come and congregate. And if you're going to be around, the Baker Street Babes would like to invite you to the Daintiest Thing Under a Bonnet Charity Ball 2014. It's our second annual Daintiest Thing Ball. 100% of the proceeds from the ball, the ticketing and the auction of Sherlockian arts and crafts and rare books, pastiches, etc., fan art, it's all going to benefit the Wounded Warrior Project. It's going to be held Thursday, the 16th of January at 8 p.m. That's at the Players Club, 16 Gramercy Park South. And the theme this year is noir, a la Basil Rathbone. So if you want to take part in the costume competition, you're going to have to start thinking of sexy noir outfits to put together, although you can also compete in the Victorian category if you'd like to. There's going to be a quiz, as I mentioned, cosplay, costume competition, raffle, and military-themed Sherlockian toast throughout. And we're going to feature the band, the Wandering Cellist Ensemble. It's electric cello. It's completely awesome. Tickets are only $35 a piece, folks. It covers entry, covers lots of yummy appetizers, we have hors d'oeuvres, etc. And there's going to be a cash bar as well if you want to wander around with a whiskey in your fist. Thank you so much for being a part of our Sherlockian community and this podcast, and we can't wait to see you there during the birthday weekend.
Hi everyone, Sarah here. We'd like to take a few minutes to thank our sponsors, the Baker Street Journal, which has been the premier publication of Sherlockian scholarship since 1946. In each issue, you get articles, essays, and even cartoons, and you can subscribe at their website, bakerstreetjournal.com. We would also like to thank Wessex Press and Gasogene Books, which has a wide variety of Sherlockian publications available, from scholarly and humorous writing to fiction to audio CDs. You can learn more and check out their catalog at wessexpress.com. The 2014 Scintillation of Scions will be June 6th and 7th in Hanover, Maryland. This is an annual symposium of fans of Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And it includes lots of speakers from all around the U.S., as well as opportunities to meet other Sherlockians. You can learn more at scintillation.org. Finally, we'd like to remind you of our support for the Undershaw Preservation Trust, which is working to preserve Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's home in Surrey, England. You can learn more about their efforts at saveundershaw.com. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so when Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your quotidian world has got you crying. Won't you two one mine?
And welcome to episode 47 of the Baker Street Babes podcast. Today we have The Game Is On, the Sherlock fan game that is absolutely fantastic. We have four members of the team here, as well as Baker Street Babes Curly, Maria, Taylor, and Artie. So say hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
We have a great gabble of fabulous, fabulous people. So like I said, the game is on. It's a Sherlock fan game. It's completely created by fans of the show. It's a RPG, and we're basically going to talk to these fabulous people about how it came about, where it's going. So I guess we have to induct you as honorary Baker Street Babes. As there's so many of you, we're just going to ask each of you a different question, if that's okay. It will still count. You'll still get your membership.
Alrighty. Should I have studied?
I don't know, maybe.
So, Yuri, what is the first time that you got in, like, touch or in contact with Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, like, how did it start?
Yeah, what's the first encounter you had with Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, well, apart from, you know, probably watching some shows or reading some books. I probably, in my university course, my professor asked us to read a story from the canon. And so I think it started like this. And then there was Robert Downey Jr. movie in cinema. And I think everything started from there.
All right. What is your favorite canon story, Joe?
My favorite canon story is extremely unoriginal. It's The Speckled Band. it was the first one. It was also a locked room mystery, and that actually set off an interest that I have in locked room mysteries, and I've read a bunch of those. And I still love it. I just find it, I think it's hilarious. It's brilliant and it's hilarious. I just love the idea. I mean, I was in elementary school, and I just thought, what an awesome idea that they thought it was, they didn't know what this was, and it was a snake, you know, and of course, it's everybody's favorite story, and so, but still, I can't help it.
That's okay. It's not my favorite story, so it's all right.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Lynx if you could take out one character from the show or from the canon stories out for lunch. Who would you take and what would you talk to them about?
Oh, wow. I don't even know if I could spend the day with any of the characters. I think I'd be like too starstruck to be anything other than like an awkward blubbering mess. So, I don't know. I'm pretty sure, like, Holmes and Watson from any of the modern adaptations would find what I do every day, like, extremely boring. So I'll probably take out the Victorian characters, because at least for them, I'm some sort of fascinating time traveler from the future. But for modern Sherlock and Holmes, I mean, for modern Holmes and Watson, I'm just a random computer scientist with, like, weirdly specific knowledge about their personal lives. Yeah, I kind of want to avoid the stalkerish vibe. So, yeah, I'll take the Victorian ones. I'll take them out to tea and talk about, like, cars and television and other futuristic things and seem interesting.
That's glorious. I'm sure that'd be an amazing conversation.
All right, and last but not least, Carolyn. I guess maybe it's a little bit of a throwaway, but what's your favorite adaptation of the Sherlock Holmes stories?
Oh, that's not a throwaway.
Oh,
that's a very difficult question. I have a soft spot, of course, for Basil Rathbone because I'm old enough to have started with the movies. But to me, Jeremy Brett is perhaps the iconic representation of the canon Sherlock. But I absolutely adore the BBC Sherlock reboot. And I think they've captured the spirit of the original canon when it was released better than anything that's come out for a long time. So I don't know if I could pick a particular one. It depends on the mood and the moment. But I must confess, I am totally Sherlocked right now.
Delightful. So yay, you're now all honorary Baker Street babes. Put it on your business card.
I'm gonna.
Alrighty. So I guess we'll jump right into your game. I mean, it's a fabulous thing. And just like we were all looking at the website earlier, just sort of listening to the music and everything. For those that will be listening that don't really actually know what this game is about, can you sort of give us a summary? Like it's BBC Sherlock based, but can you sort of like expand on that? Not tell us like any plot details, but sort of go an overview.
I don't want to give too much away because I feel like it kind of ruins the experience a little bit if you know a little bit too much going in. But basically, you play as John throughout the game. So we're trying to follow the theme of the original canon, mm-hmm. of seeing everything through John's eyes. So you're going to be playing the game as John and, you're going to be solving, you're going to be helping solve, like a few big mysteries and as well as a little bit of puzzle in here and there. So if you want to think of it as sort of a cross between Professor Layton and, Ace Attorney, it has that sort of vibe to it. It's very, it's puzzly, but it also has that whole mystery solving aspect to it. So yeah, try not to give any spoilers, but that's the bare bones that I can give without spoiling any like major details.
Great. Jerry, what is it that you do?
I'm a main case writer. I don't want to give anything away, and Lynx, you can just start yelling if I say something you don't want me to say. But there are different kinds of cases in the game, and the some of the main characters from the canon and the show get their own sort of larger, longer cases. So, for example, I'm writing both Mycroft's and Lestrade's cases. So you get to spend more time with them exploring a mystery, is what the main cases are. And so that you meet people like, you know, all the people, Mrs. Hudson and all the faves, each get their own case. So... So that's what I'm doing.
If I could just cut in, like, yeah, to explain that a bit more. Yeah, we have,
I didn't want to say too much. So.
Yeah, I know. I noticed that it's okay. I'll take care of it. Just so there's, what we have is that there's certain characters in, the BBC Sherlock series that like Mycroft and Molly and Hudson, Lestrade. I think, is that everyone?
Harry.
And oh, other people. But
Sally, Anderson and Donovan.
Yeah. Sally and Anderson. So there's those characters, and we wanted to really follow that theme of that BBC Sherlock did of adapting the original canon stories. So what we've done is that we've taken a story from the canon and have that story adapted into modern times and centered around one of the main characters. So there's going to be a Molly case that you can solve, and there's going to be a Mycroft case that has to do with like government stuff that you can solve. And it's an overarching mystery that you have to really dig into and figure out what's going on. So yeah, that's what the main cases are. So that's what Joey does. She writes for both Lestrade's and Mycroft's case.
That's really neat. That's a really neat idea.
Yeah. So we just wanted to give them a little bit more screen time than they got, because I feel like there's so much in those characters that you really that the show just doesn't have the time to go into, and there's so much backstory and really just personality there that doesn't really come out in the series too well. And we really wanted to explore that a bit more and give that to the fans, since yeah. So that's that.
Who decides on what these backstories are going to be? Is that a decision that you make, or is it left up to the writers?
What we did is that I did a list of like each character, and I didn't want to restrict them to a story so much. So I just told them, I gave them two criteria, which is that their story has to center around, one of the characters on the list, and it has to be an adaptation of an ACD story that hasn't been adapted yet in the BBC series and might, and hopefully won't be adapted in the future. So, we tried to pick stories that wouldn't get, that we probably won't get adapted in the future. But, anyway, so, I let them have complete freedom on what they wanted to do with a character and what they wanted to happen in their story. So I didn't want to restrict them too much, because they're the writers. I'm just the director, and they know what they're doing. And I made sure that I got people who knew what they were doing. So I have faith in them, and they're doing a great job. So
nice. So Yuri, what are you doing?
I'm a character illustrator. So basically, Links and stuff selected one illustrator who is drawing all the bases for all the characters. Mm-hmm. And I and the other character illustrators have to edit these bases to make many different expressions.
Oh, I see. Okay. So the ones that we saw in the trailer aren't those that you guys created.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're really pretty.
Thanks very much. It's such a hard job, actually, because, you know, editing someone else's style is not really easy, because maybe you know how to make an expression, but maybe it doesn't fit someone else's style.
Yeah.
So it's not such a straightforward process like it looks like.
But I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, it looks really, really cool.
Yeah.
It does.
Sure. Yeah, it's very funny.
Basically, I am doing side case puzzles and writing. So the ancillary puzzles inside the main cases, the extra puzzles, I'm hopefully coming up with some good extra puzzles for Watson to solve and some fun dialogue to go with it.
Puzzle making. Do you have a team under you that you say make something clever, or is it something that you completely orchestrate? Because I am hopeless at puzzles. Like, I got one of the Professor Layton games, and it took me 3 weeks to beat it, while my sister did it in 24 hours. So that's how, like, bad I am at puzzles. So, like, I can't even imagine creating puzzles.
We have a team of puzzle designers, yeah, that work on it. So they each design their own puzzle. And you can talk more about it, Carolyn.
Oh, I was just going to say, some people have pitched puzzle ideas. I came up with one for myself, and you basically put it out there, and hopefully somebody will write some dialogue and some setup around it, and hopefully some wonderful illustrators will be able to turn it into something more attractive, the artwork that I usually create. And you put it out there, and then right now, several of the puzzles, the side case puzzles in particular, we are all testing to see if they work. In other words, can other people solve the puzzle, or is it just insane?
Yeah, okay. Who came up with the idea? And yeah, just tell us about how this baby started.
I guess I've always really been a big fan of Sherlock Holmes and just mystery stories in general. So I knew I really wanted to make a mystery game, and I think it was sometime during, like, the great gap between the second and third series, and I sort of took a look around the fandom, and there was just this level of talent and dedication that's really immediately apparent, and you rarely see it in other fandoms, and it's really easy to get kind of caught up in that atmosphere, and I really wanted to contribute something of my own, and so I started putting together this game, and I set up a little blog for it, and I didn't really expect it to become quite as popular as it did. But then I put it up, and then I walked away from my computer for about an hour, and then I came back, and then suddenly there's just thousands and thousands of people. And I'm like, where did you all come from? And they're all commenting and reblogging and asking more about it, and it was crazy, and everyone was so enthusiastic and so supportive, and they all wanted to help, so I guess I just started accepting applications and resumes, and it was just email after email and hundreds of people, and it was really unreal and humbling and incredibly overwhelming, but yeah, it was great. It was great to see just all of these people coming together just to make this sort of, to work on this project. I don't know. It was great.
Yeah,
that's kind of how it came to be.
It's quite impressive. But, I mean, how long has it been going on? I mean, how long has the process taken until, like, this point?
Oh, how long has it been? I think it's been 7 or 8 months now. So we're still at the beginning of the process. But and we've had a lot of new people come on. And I don't know, as a director, when you're building up a team for like a project like this, the sort of people that you choose to take on is really one of the most important decisions you have to make. And a lot of time was just spent like going out and finding these people and, making sure that the level of talent on this is high, because there's really a certain level of responsibility when you bring in people to work on a project like this. Cause you want to make sure that they're, you know, proud of what they're working on. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is that all these people pour all these hours and hard work into this, and then the end product is something that they don't even want to touch. They're like completely ashamed. it's a really big responsibility, and not only to the team, but to the fans and to the gaming industry as a whole, because you really want to show that there's this narrative potential in video games and it's worth exploring. Yeah. And as a director, you really have to bring in talent into the video game development process, and that's the only way you're going to get people to look at video games as a more serious art form, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that was a really long answer.
It's interesting.
Long process. It's a very long process, but it's been fun. And I'm really lucky to have all these really talented people work and bring this to life, so, yeah.
How long have you been into gaming?
I don't know, since I was really young, like, since when the first consoles came out, I was really into games. I don't know how everyone else is, so.
Yeah. Oh, I started back with the Infocom text adventures. I don't know if you guys remember those. Zork, the Enchanter and all those. I don't know. Infocom actually did a really fantastic Sherlock game, but you can't find it now. It's not on any of the collections being sold. I'm not sure why. But that was my first introduction to gaming, and it stuck with me ever since because, just as Link said, they were all about narrative. You know, there were puzzles and whatnot, but they told all these stories, and there were all these different genres. There was adventure, there was romance, there was fantasy, there was everything. And so to this day, I mean, going through console games and PC games and iOS games, you know, to this day, I most value the ones that put me in a certain place and get me sucked into the story, which is, I think, actually much more difficult when you are the one providing the graphics and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff versus the person coming up with it in their head, like with text adventures. So as Link said, I completely agree that narrative and story in video gaming is one of my greatest passions.
I have to say, one of the reasons I rather enjoyed working on this game is I'm learning all sorts of new collaborative technologies, both their pros and their cons.
Yeah, we actually were going to ask you about that. Like, what has the collaboration process been like? Because the amount of people that you have working on this is astronomical.
Yes, so, like, it's crazy.
What is that like with, like, all the different teams, just having to manage all that sort of thing? Like, what kind of problems have you run into?
I wouldn't say we've run into problems. I don't know. Managing it is a whole lot of work, and oh my gosh, so many hours of lost sleep over this. But I made sure that before all these people came in that we had a good structure and a workflow set up so that they wouldn't be completely lost. I set up this separate website, which everyone's using now, which they never used before, and it's called Trello. And I really recommend that, not to plug Trello or anything, but if you want to do mm-hmm. this sort of project, you should really check out something like Trello and some sort of collaborative website and set up a sort of structure. And I set up also monthly meetings. We have monthly meetings on Skype, and we're just making sure that everyone's staying in contact. And I guess the number one problem would be we can't really offer much incentive to anyone to really keep working other than please. Like, can you please do this? I mean, that's all we can do. We can't say, oh, I'll pay you, you know, because yeah. we don't have the money for it to pay 200 people for this. So it's really just... Which I guess there's also the pro of that is that everyone who's on this project they're not really working just because, you know, just for this shallow sort of monetary gain. They're really working just because they really want to work on this and they really love doing this sort of thing and working on this project. And I don't know, it's a double-edged sword with the whole volunteer thing, but it's been a good process, and I've learned a lot, and I know everyone else here has learned a lot about how to work in teams and that sort of thing. So
if I could interject for just a moment, I want to point out Lynx is sort of downplaying this, but you should see the organization. I mean, what she's done, I think almost single-handedly, and to organize this all, to keep it all together, to have everyone, all the teams going. I swear, if she ever decided to go into crime, she could rival Moriarty. It's sometimes just frightening how on top of everything she seems to be. So that really, with all the collaborative technologies and everything, makes for just a really amazing work environment, I guess you'd say. Like, the fact that I can start having a conversation with someone at 2 a.m, you know, someone in the UK or wherever, Australia, about story in the middle of the night, you know, is great. And I just really needed to give Lynx extra props that she would probably not give herself for how she's running this.
Yeah, that's what Barry just told me, that you never sleep, that you always respond really quickly whenever she has a question.
Yeah, well, basically my life now. People telling me, like, I'm secretly Moriarty or something. All my little webs. Everyone, I see what you're all doing. So, yeah.
She really does.
I have to say, I just came back from a convention where there was a significant number of gamers, including a couple of people who work for places like Disney on doing their gaming projects and whatnot. And it's safe to say that Lynx and several other people working on this project could easily take this and get themselves jobs in the industry. And having having worked on the in the dot-com era back in the 90s, I have to say one of the things that has amazed me is not only the phenomenal level of talent that I'm working with on here. I'm very humbled by that. But I'm just completely amazed at how Lynx has managed to do the organization. And frankly, I have to say, as a feminist, I just really want to, you know, run up and down Silicon Valley and shout, don't even talk to me, guys. This is what women can do on their own. So.
Well, and one question that we have is, because it's like a pixel, sort of most of it's like the actual, like a pixelated world. And is that for aesthetic reasons, or is it just, so it's like the fastest to make, because all of the, action, interaction, etc. is, I mean, you have those amazing drawings, but like the essential world that you move in is like this pixelated universe. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I feel like, sort of games where it's like really photorealistic, if you don't have the engine, the power to make that sort of game, then it'll come out in the uncanny valley and it's just not gonna look good. So, and there's no way that we could really, you know, take all of London and make it a 3D model of every single place inside, the Sherlock universe. And I felt like if we just simplifying that and not being so photorealistic just does so much to making it look so much more professional and not so uncanny, because there's just some games that you play and then you see that they're trying to make it really realistic, but it just doesn't quite get there and it just takes you out of the experience and it's not good. So,
and it's pretty cute. I mean, I just love looking at the things and you just recognize the world.
Yeah, like I remember seeing a post going around that you were asking people to sort of like make pixel pieces of themselves to put in the game, and I tried so hard and I could not figure out how to do it. I completely failed, and I was like, I want to be in the game, I really do, and I just couldn't figure it out and I gave up and I went to go pout. So like, I mean, because you obviously have like pixel artists and stuff, like my question is, like, how many like characters have you had to create for this?
We mostly just use the, of course, the characters from the original canon, the original canon too, but as well as, the BBC Sherlock, canon. But as in like new characters, the fans have been really good about that, because we did that whole character contest thing a while back with, just asking people to send to, like, people who to edit these, pixel sprites and make their own so that they can show up in the game. And they do show up. So they did a lot of that, extra work for us, which is we're really glad. And it gives them an opportunity to show up as, like, a client in a case or, like, just one someone wandering around, which is really nice if you're playing the game. You're like, oh my god, that's me! That's me! I'm asking for Sherlock for help. Yeah, so.
I really wanted to be that person.
Maybe we'll make one for you.
And
we'll
just put it in there.
As the Apple user in this group, can I ask you, what kind of platform is it going out on? And will it be just PC accessible, or will it be for both? Or
we're going to make sure that it's PC and Mac compatible. And after we release the computer version, we're gonna adapt it to mobile phones, because we know a lot of people do want to play it.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Be great for the tube ride.
Oh, yes.
Yay! Nice. It's really difficult to do a mobile game right from the get-go, so we really want to make sure the PC and the Mac game is awesome first, and then we can start focusing on, because it's basically like making the game over again to make it on a mobile phone, so it's best to just focus on the PC and the Mac first, and then we're going to do the mobile later, but yeah, there you go.
And you mentioned the BBC, right? And that you use some characters of that. Are there any like fandom Easter eggs or something in the game?
Oh yes,
good.
A lot of fun with that. I'm not going to spoil anything, but if you're in the Sherlock fandom, you're going to recognize some stuff that maybe not other people catch. So yeah, there you go.
Great. I see that Becky has joined us. Hello.
Hey, Becky.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself? Like, what do you do in terms of the game?
Okay, I'm Becky Simpson, and I'm one of the writers on the game. The other people come up with the puzzle ideas and stuff, and then I help out writing the dialogue for the characters. and putting the bits together into a case shape.
So she's in charge of inserting all the Sherlock snark in there along with the puzzle.
Yeah, the sarcastic remarks and a friendly banter between John and Sherlock.
I guess out of curiosity, like, how much has been written so far? Like, how many pages, how many thousands of words?
A lot.
Because there's quite a large team of writers, so we're all kind of doing things at the same time. It's hard to keep up what everybody else is doing. So yeah, a lot of words have been written, I'd say.
One of the good things about this team in general is that we've all got different things to do. So like the writers aren't expected to come up with these amazing puzzles, which I'm quite pleased about. Yes. So the people who are good with that kind of thing, who that side of their brain, who could come up with these cool puzzles and logic things, that's their sort of forte. And then, you know, the illustrators and the writers, it's everyone playing to their own talents.
I was going to say, you said that you've been testing them. Do you have a pool of testers? Or is there a specific, how do you go about doing that?
We're really lucky because we have such a large team that basically everyone who's on the team can, and it's such a diverse group too from, all over the world. So we don't really need outside testers. We just use everyone who's on the team to test each other's work. Anyone who isn't a puzzle designer will test all the puzzle designers' work and make sure that normal people, the artists, the people who are programmers, the people who are all kinds of people who are left side, right side brain can solve this puzzle or at least get close to solving this puzzle, you know?
That's great. What kind of software do you use to create these create the puzzles in general?
For pitching puzzles, it's just basic, like, when you're laying out the puzzle, you're just basically, the puzzle designers will Photoshop, like, the layout and that sort of thing. For actually putting together the game, you would have a separate software for that.
Lynx, am I right in saying that, just because I'm hearing a little bit of nervousness about puzzles, that there is the option that I don't remember if it was Layton if you really, really, if it's just one of those kinds of puzzles that just makes you crazy, you know you'll never be able to solve, you can actually skip it?
Is that correct? Yes, you can always skip it. Don't worry. Technically, you could just go through the game and just solve the main cases and skip every single side case if you wanted to, if you really don't like puzzles. But I don't know why you're playing this game if you don't like puzzles.
What about pretty images?
But you can skip puzzles if you don't want to solve them. And you can get, another thing is, if you are stuck, you can get three hints from Sherlock whenever, on any puzzle you're solving. So you can get hints if you get really stuck. If you just need that push from Sherlock, like, why can't you see this, John? It's yes. So obvious.
I was just going to say, is he going to make fun of you?
Oh, yes. So much snark in the hints. Yes.
And everywhere else.
And everywhere else. Snark.
That sounds really nice.
Sounds amazing.
Well, we've heard about like the artists, the writers, but what about the music? Because you do have a soundtrack as well, so tell us a bit about that.
Oh yeah, we don't have any music people with us right now, but oh my god, they're amazing. I don't know, have you heard the soundtrack?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have some really, really talented people on the sound design team. We have Yanksy, her name's Little Faith, if you want to go check her up on Bandcamp. Catherine, Diana Kim, Ido Strauss, Jonathan. We have a lot of people, really, really great people, and I wish they were all here so I could talk to you about it, but I don't know how they do what they do, but they do it amazing, so yeah, I don't know what else to say about it except they're awesome, and you should listen to our soundtrack.
Gorgeous. Yeah, it's really, really good.
What's so great about working with such seriously professional level talents on everything, I mean, from the art to the music to everything, is that, you know, as a writer, I kind of get to play the game, or at least my cases, before anyone else, because I see it in my head and all that kind of stuff. And it's so great just knowing that I don't have to worry that when I give this away, sort of like Link said, I don't have to worry that it's not going to be something that I'm going to want to play myself. I know that the illustrations look great. The music sounds amazing. When an illustrator had to create something for one of my, you know, dialogue scenes, a piece of art. It was perfect. I mean, it just came right out of my head, you know, and was there on the screen. And, it is so inspiring because as I'm writing it, I'm imagining, you know, what it's going to look like and what it's going to sound like. And, it just pushes me to want to be as good as I possibly can to really bring my A game so that I can bring good stuff to these, really amazing, you know, talents.
Do you have sound editing? Like, do you have people like thumping into walls and?
Yeah, we do. We have, I don't know if you see we released a little, developer showcase video and you can see a little bit of what they're doing behind the scenes with clinking glasses together and throwing coins on a plate. And there's a lot of, really a lot of sound effect work going on in the background too, as well as the music. It's not just all about the music. There's a lot of cool sound stuff going on too. So yeah, there's a lot of people doing that work.
I do love that about the way the music, I mean, it's not the Sherlock soundtrack, but anyone who's familiar with it will definitely recognize the style.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
That's true. Yeah. It's not just the BBC Sherlock soundtrack. It is like every Sherlock soundtrack. It sounds like a Sherlockian music, so which is what we were going for. So,
well, I just like to throw in, because I know none of these other people will say this, but from music to sound effects to the amazing art and the pixel artists like Yuri and everything else, I confess I am truly humbled to be working with these people. When I got involved, I was just like, oh, this is a little fan thing. This will be kind of fun to dabble at. And having seen who I'm working with and the quality of what's coming out, I truly am astounded. It is better than some of the stuff that I've actually paid money for at the Apple App Store to buy a casual game. So I think every Sherlock fan, no matter what flavor of Sherlock Holmes they are fans of, will feel honored and impressed when this game comes out.
No, and I think that's a very poignant point that you make, is that I think a lot of people underestimate what fans can create, and that fans come from all walks of life. So sure, you have, you know, preteens and teenagers who maybe aren't as worldly or whatever, but then you have like professionals, and it just comes down to the fact that everyone likes this same thing and they want to create something in honor of that. So well done.
It just, the whole so project, whilst I've been listening to you, like the whole project just for me kind of encapsulates, you know, what fandom can potentially be and, you know, how it should be. Everybody using their talent to create something in honor of something they love. And, you know, you, Christina, you can edit this out or whatever. I don't know. But what you've been saying about it being, you know, this tiny little fan project that then becomes something bigger, I think, is something that all the Baker Street babes can relate to.
We certainly
can. Tiny little bit.
Now, we really have, like, the capacity now to collaborate with others on, like, the scale that wasn't really possible when I was younger. So I think it's really important that, like, more fandoms and art in general just moves away from that solo mentality and just becomes, you know, more a collaborative, you know, adventure rather than just, you know, one person working on something. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of, this project is a little bit unique in that way. And I really hope that it inspires other fandoms and other people to do the sort of thing we're doing.
Do we have any sort of projected release date or?
Yeah. When's it coming out?
Ballpark. Will I get to season 3 first? Cause I didn't think that was possible.
I'm going to have to, like, defer to MoFat and say it's going to come out when it comes out.
Troll.
Yeah.
I mean, like, but how far along in the process are you?
It's hard to say, but we are really far along as it is right now. So I don't want to set a date on it because I really don't want to rush it. Because if I set this date, then everyone's going to, you know, I don't want it to be forced to release something that I'm not 100% happy with.
Of
so
course.
I don't want to set a date on it right now. So I'm sorry. I can't say.
Yeah. I mean, and again, because everyone's volunteers, there's, you know, some people can sort of I don't mean disappear as in like forever, but some people have to take time off and then come back. It's not sort of a standard game studio where, you know, everyone comes to work and does their work and then leaves. So I've already experienced, just crazy life stuff, unpredictable, that, severely interfered with my ability to work. I would expect that that's part of the problem in projecting when it's going to come out.
Yeah. And of course, because it's a creative process and there's like, I mean, of course there's some things that you can control, but at other times you just need to be in the mood to do it and to be creative and write snark.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best thing about it is it's not a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
You know, there's no sort of like stipulation where you have to do this by this date. We have like, we do have deadlines, but they're fairly relaxed monthly guidelines about what we should be aiming for each month. But Lynx is pretty chilled out. She doesn't crash on everyone too hard.
I'm not like an evil dictator.
And that is a good point about the creativity, because, you know, I tend to like to write at 2 a.m. or whatever. And, it is really great to just be able to, you know, actually feel the muse instead of being like, okay, it's 1 o'clock and now I have to be creative.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That doesn't lend itself to actually producing good work anyway. So that's no good.
But I do keep thinking of that Douglas Adams quote he said about deadlines. He said that he loves deadlines. He loves the whooshing sound they make as they go by.
All right. I think we're sort of out of questions, but if you want to tell us anything else.
Yeah, is there anything else that you kind of want to mention that we haven't touched on?
I guess the question I get a lot is, like, what sort of games did I draw inspiration from when putting this together? I don't know. Usually my answer to that is... I took a lot of inspiration from the mechanics from puzzle games and mystery games that are around. But really what inspires me the most, like, to make these sort of games are really story-driven games. And I really think video games need to take that step forward and become a new storytelling medium. I mean, there's just so much potential there, and I just don't see a lot of games that are coming out nowadays that are really exploring that potential. There's so many games that are, like, just another shooter, just another platformer, just another this, just another that, and there's really a possibility there for so much more. And I don't know, of course those kind of games, they all have their place and they can be really fun, and I play those games, but when I look back and the games that sort of stick in my mind and the experiences that stay with me and that affect me, they're all from games that really had a strong story behind it. So I feel like it's really easy for game designers nowadays to fall into this trap of rehashing the same formula over and over again. And I just think it's really important that we as artists just keep pushing and pushing the limits of what this medium and seeing what it can really do and what it's capable of. So, I don't know. It's just, if anyone's going into this sort of indie development sort of thing, it's just something that I tell people that, you know, it doesn't have to have a story to be good. There should be this balance between story and gameplay, and finding that balance entirely depends on what you're trying to do. I don't know. I feel like it's important that you just don't keep making more and more of the same sort of thing, that you really try to create some sort of unique and meaningful experience for the player that isn't just more same sort of thing. I don't know.
No, it makes sense, because you've, this being a fan-driven project, we're all very invested in Sherlock Holmes in one way or another. I mean, I think all the BBC and then anything else. And for the most part, I think all or most of the writers are taken from, do fan fiction or from screenwriting or from those kinds of backgrounds. I don't know if we have a lot of actual game writers. So the fact is that the writers are almost entirely coming at it from a very story-oriented perspective, and then Lynx is sort of molding us into game writers, which honestly I think is much better than the other way around, which is usually how it works in like AAA games and that kind of thing.
A lot of the writing in games nowadays, it's not at the level that it really should be, because all the good writers go into writing novels, and then no one really sees video games as a really viable medium to write for, and it's really disappointing, and I really wish that more writers went into the video game industry and really made games better than they are, because there's some really sloppy writing in video games nowadays, and that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I think most of the writers on the team are coming from a writing perspective rather than the video game perspective. And we're learning as we go along how to adapt our writing to video games. It's a really interesting process. I had absolutely no idea about any of it before, really. And it's quite difficult to get to grips with, but it's a lot of fun. And I think it is something that now I'm learning how to do it. I probably would consider doing it more in the future. So hopefully more people will get inspired to continue writing in the video game genre as well.
Have you played any of the other like popular Sherlock Holmes games? You know, like the Creeping Watson one.
Oh God. Don't remind me of Creepy Watson. The thing gives me nightmares.
Not really. I mean, I've played a couple of ones on the PlayStation. There was one that the Testament of Sherlock Holmes came out quite recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was quite a cool game. But yeah, I don't really play many PC games actually. So, but I'll definitely be playing this one, obviously.
I played a lot of Sherlock games. Actually, one of the best ones that I've played recently isn't a video game. It's actually a tabletop game, which it's called Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, and I'm plugging that now because it's an awesome game. And if you love the ACD canon, you're gonna totally fall in love with that game because it's so authentic and it's great. So I don't know, I took a lot of inspiration from that. So
now, if I can add one last thing, among the other things I really like about this game, the project, is that it's going to be released in many languages. And I think it's a good way to involve more people because, you know, the fandom is basically just English speaking. And it can exclude someone sometimes, but in this case, no one will be excluded.
That's
because
brilliant.
It's going to be translated in so many different languages.
Ah, that's lovely.
Do you have a team of translators then?
Yes.
yes, we do, yeah. We have a very large team of translators, yeah. So I'm just glad it's going to be out there for no matter where you are, you're going to see it. So it's nice.
Great. And will it be released simultaneously in languages, or will the other languages come in later?
We're going to try to make it as we're going to try to aim for a simultaneous release for that. But we'll see. We'll see. We're definitely going to try to make it there. Hopefully.
Very cool. Well, I mean, thank you so much for, you know, having a chat with us. We'll definitely link to everything. Where can people find out more about the game?
Oh, you can go to sherlock-thegame.tumblr.com if you want to check us out. That's our main development blog. But you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and pretty much any social media platform. Just type in Google Sherlock the Game is on. You'll find us. Don't worry about it. We're everywhere.
Great, and if people want to get involved, are you still taking applications for sorts of things, or?
Yes, we are definitely taking applications. You can apply on our Tumblr site, and I think you can apply from Facebook as well. But there's a form you can fill out. It's easy. Just make sure that you put your best work forward, because that's all we have to judge you on. And there is a really high, we have a high standard, and we want to really maintain that. So make sure when you apply that you make sure that you're putting your best foot forward. You're not just doing like this last minute type up, because I just immediately reject those. I'm sorry. If I don't see that you did put a lot of effort into it, I can't accept you. So yeah, just put a lot of effort into it when you're applying, and that's it. You should be fine.
Links, are you looking for all positions, all people for all departments right now?
Yes. What we need the most right now are programmers. We're looking for animators to build up our animation staff, and we're also looking for music composers. If you're a composer, if you want to work with all these other fabulous composers, we're looking for pretty much anyone, so go ahead. If you have a talent that you think that will help us, just go ahead and apply. We'll see. Yeah.
All right, great. Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If this quotidian world has got you crying, want you to